is Bean to Barstool, a podcast that looks at the intersections of craft beer and craft chocolate. My name is David Nilsson. I'm a professional beer writer and an advanced Cicerone, and the creator and host of this show. The music for this episode is by my dear friend, indie folk musician Anna P.S. You can find out more about Anna's music in the show notes or at her website, annapsmusic.com. You can find links and information about our guests in the show notes as well. I hope you enjoy this episode of Bean to Barstool. Today we're going to look at a really interesting collaboration between a chocolate maker and a brewer. There's a few different ways these collaborations typically work. Sometimes it's not even right to call it a true collaboration. Maybe a chocolate maker provides cacao nibs for breweries, so a brewery reaches out to them and just orders their nibs. That would be the case with a place like Ethereal Confections out of Illinois, where they supply cacao nibs for 100 or more breweries around the country. Sometimes, in the case of a maker like Cho, who we interviewed just a couple episodes ago, Cho provides cacao nibs to BSG, Brewers Supply Group, who's a major ingredient supplier for the craft brewing industry. So a lot of breweries will just order nibs from BSG. Maybe they know the name Cho, maybe they don't, but they're just using those nibs and it's not really a direct collaboration. Sometimes, though, we get breweries and makers who are near each other geographically, so they will have some kind of relationship, and maybe the maker will supply nibs for a special beer or use one of the brewery's beers or brewing ingredients for a special bar or something like that. A good example would be Noble Beast Brewing in Cleveland working with Cleveland Chocolate Company. We've interviewed them together on the podcast before. The collaboration we're going to look at today, though, is a really unique relationship. It's an ongoing collaboration. Somerville Chocolate is a tenant in the building of Aeronaut Brewing in Somerville, Massachusetts. So inside the Aeronaut facility where they are brewing beer day in, day out, Eric Parks of Somerville Chocolate is making his Bean to Bar chocolate. And this has allowed for a constant, ongoing creative exchange between chocolate maker and brewer. They've worked on a number of beers using Eric's cacao nibs, and then Eric has made a bunch of bars using Aeronaut's beer, specific brewing ingredients, and then, really interestingly, some cacao and other ingredients that have first been used in a beer, and then he takes them back and makes chocolate from them. Those of you who've been following Bean to Barstool for a while, Somerville will be familiar to you. We talked with Eric back in one of the early episodes of the show. And any of you who attended my beer chocolate virtual tasting last winter, we tasted a couple of his beer bars in that. Today, we're going to talk with Eric along with two members of the Aeronaut Brewing team, brewmaster Mark Bowers and director of brewing operations Felipe Garcia. We talk all about their creative relationship and then dive in on some of the specific collaborations they've worked on. This is a really fun conversation. I started out by asking them how the relationship between Somerville and Aeronaut got started, this unusual arrangement where Eric is making chocolate inside the brewery. The first voice you hear from is Eric, then you'll hear from Mark immediately after that.
The Aeronaut Brewery was started in what was formerly an envelope factory in Somerville, and had been running for close to 100 years. And it got bought out by its competition, and the owners of the building started leasing space to interesting people who needed some cheap rent kind of space, such as it was back then. And Aeronaut was getting up and running. And I'm also trained as an architect, and I was doing architectural gigs. And one of them was to help one of the companies here in the brewery get up and running with permitting drawings. And I'd been doing this chocolate thing in my house, it's sort of a cottage industry thing. And so I came to the brewery because of that. And then I was sold by one of the brewery owners on carving out my own space here and kind of upping my chocolate game, creating a basically a wholesale production space within the brewery. And the concept of the brewery at the time still is that there's sort of a half of the brewery is a food hub where they would sublet space to food startup, sort of as an incubator, but not quite. I was here in a farmer's market delivery service, a coffee roaster, a microgreen grower, and a restaurant or two, things like that. So that's how I came to be here. I don't come from a strong beer background, so a lot of my beer education has come from just rubbing elbows with these folks here.
And then from the brewery side, what was that conversation like of bringing in a craft chocolate maker?
I learned from the owners of Aeronaut that we were getting a chocolate person to say, "Oh, this is great. Having green chocolate and along with beer is just great." We already had a setup of a coffee roaster that was setting up shop at the time too, and go, "Oh, coffee and chocolate. How can we go wrong?" Well, that's kind of how I got it. And then once Eric showed up and we just started talking to him and getting to know him and what he was trying to do and started figuring out what kind of beers we could put chocolate in.
Well, Eric mentioned that he didn't have a whole lot of familiarity with beer before this relationship began. Mark and Felipe, what was your familiarity with craft chocolate before he moved in?
On my hand, it was very limited. I think, Eric, I can say that we all have a funny relationship with neighbors. So I can probably tell that Eric is probably my favorite neighbor, aside from the fact that whenever he's roasting some nibs back there, it's pretty tempting to just jump over the counter to try whatever is being processed there. So I always like chocolate a lot. I come from a country that produces a lot of cacao, which is Brazil. But Eric, I think he pushed the envelope on a lot of things for me when it comes to learning about the craft malt produced chocolate.
Mark, how about you? Did you have much familiarity with craft chocolate?
Yes, I did. I've always liked chocolate, so I started just buying whenever I'd go to some new store or we're traveling. I would always try to pick up some type of craft chocolate if it was around in the shop, and I really got to liking the really different chocolates from different regions. And so I always looked out for that, checked that out. Found a few beers during my travels that put chocolate in them. And I always wonder, well, how did they get that chocolate flavor in there? So it's always kind of been there a little bit.
Well, we'll talk in just a little bit about actually using cacao in some of your beers, but I'm curious just from a sensory standpoint and knowledge standpoint. Felipe, you mentioned when he's roasting, you want to, hop on back there and see what he's doing. What has it been like creatively just having a chocolate maker right here in shop where you can smell what he's doing, you can see the ingredients, you can taste stuff, that kind of thing?
I think that, like Mark said, he linked beer with chocolate. I think it's a pretty easy combination there, along with coffee as well, depending on beer styles, of course. But for us, I think it's a fairly easy connection to make. But I think one of the things that basically makes this connection even stronger is the fact that we're always pursuing good ingredients. And Eric is working with like small producers, and we, Mark and I, we always pursuing like what's next, what's new ingredients, and all that stuff. So I think that this passion for great ingredients and the similarities within the process itself, I think, I mean, there are a lot of differences as well, but I think there are similarities, and I think they converge in some points when it comes to some beer styles that we would normally see on our day-to-day operations here at the brewery.
Mark, how about you? What does that do for you creatively to have Eric making chocolate behind you?
The smells are always great, but just talking to Eric, finding out what he's doing new and such like that is just always inspiration for trying to try something different with chocolate and beer. What kind of new chocolate does he have out? What ingredients is he using in it? And it even goes the other way around. Instead of just putting chocolate in beer, it's also putting beer ingredients in chocolate too. So we have this dialogue going back and forth between both of those.
Eric, why don't you talk a little bit about that? What is it like having brewers right there? I know you've talked before about going out and asking questions like, what does that smell? And they're explaining that it's hops or whatever. What does that do for you creatively to be able to have access to that when you're working on chocolate?
Well, it's interesting because it's a lot of crossover just in terms of creativity, that the same kind of thought processes go to both things. Having people who are instrumental in the creation of beer next door allows sort of like a next level discovery of what, not just what beer is or what, role this plays, but what kinds of hops are there, what's the difference between hops. And it might be standard issue stuff for someone who's been in the brewing world for a long time, but having that level of expertise at your fingertips, it's been great. And they are doing a lot of, as a lot of breweries do, a lot of interesting playing around with beer recipes a lot, and there's a lot of little points of departure for when you say, hey, I could do what you're doing with that, or maybe you could use this, or we could share this common idea, like what your inclusion is. Maybe I could be my inclusion too, or maybe we can do that. So I think it's more the like the real time crossover, the fact that things can happen immediately or close to immediately, as opposed to a brewery that's 30 miles away and you just get together once every few months.
Well, let's talk about some of those specific collaborations. On the beer side, the big one that I'm aware of is Coco Sutra. Marco Felipe, why don't one of you tell me a little bit about that base beer, and we'll talk about how that collaboration works.
Sure, I guess I'll start because I was kind of here when it first got going. And it wasn't actually the first beer that we did with Eric. The first one we did, we did a porter, and we put in chocolate from Eric, cocoa nibs, as well as some coffee beans. And we also had a CSA group here who was doing produce and such. So we decided, why don't we throw in something fruity? We threw in blackberries. We kind of threw those three things together. It needed a little tweaking, but the beer was good. I still occasionally have somebody come by and talk about that beer too. But that kind of set the stage for it. Unfortunately, the CSA and the coffee roasters left, leaving Eric. So at that point, we wanted to do a chocolate beer with just his cocoa nibs. We chose a stout. Stouts are just very common beers that are used for chocolate because even coffee roasting, chocolate roasting led a lot to people making dark malts. A lot of these similar equipment and ideas go along with that. So it just seemed kind of natural with stouts with roasted barley to take something like roasted chocolate as well. I did a milk stout because a lot of chocolate's sweet. So we milk stout has lactose in it. So put that in. So that's kind of like the thought process behind it. Then we pretty much made a fairly standard start with milk stout. And we decided there's a lot at that time. So this is like nearly, 7, 8 years ago or even 9 years ago. There's a lot of talk about where do you put the chocolate in? How do you put it in? Do you grind it up? Do you use the nibs? Do you get an extract? Do you do it on the hot side? Do you do it in the fermenter on the cold side? And all of those things have ways have pluses and minus. So we kind of hedged our bets. We threw cocoa nibs in the hot side in the kettle when we boiled the wort. And then we threw some in what we kind of call a dry hop, which means it's in the fermenter after the beer has mostly fermented out. And we tried to pick a specific chocolate or cacao that we thought would work very good with it. Eric gave us samples of like two, three, four different ones. We picked the one we liked and went with that. And now we came out well. And we've tweaked the recipe over time, but that's kind of the base for it.
And I assume that's a pretty popular annual release for you guys. When does
Yes.
it come out each year?
It's usually late fall at this point, I believe, even some end of the winter. It's a bigger beer, higher alcohol. So that's why we try to shoot for the colder months and it seems to work better around holidays too.
Sure. So you're adding, are you still adding it hot side and cold side? You're doubling up.
Yes.
What do you feel like is contributed by doing two different additions? Do you feel like you're getting different sensory characteristics from both of those?
Yes, they're probably not as different sensory as you might think, but they do extract a few different things differently out of it. I always think of the hot side as something more like hot chocolate. Cold side, you end up with a little bit more aroma that comes out. Maybe it's a little bit more like breaking a chocolate bar and sniffing it.
And then, Eric, as I understand it, you take those nibs back and make chocolate from it, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. And obviously, one of the tricks with beer chocolate collaborations is everything that goes in chocolate has to be dry. So the first step is to dry it out. And there are different ways of doing that, but basically dehydrate them. And they come out covered in brewer's yeast and they're beautiful. I don't know how much of the minerals from the yeast are still in there and all that kind of stuff, but you dry them out and then you just refine them. I add a little bit of cocoa butter to just counteract some of the carbohydrates there from yeast and stuff like that. And give them an extra long drying to make sure there's absolutely no moisture in there. And then sometimes I'll top it off with a little air infusion with hops just to kind of beef up some of the floral notes of the hops. I mean, it's there anyway from having been in the beer, but sometimes it helps just kind of round things out.
One thing I've noticed with that bar in particular, that's the beer fermented bar, is that you having gone into the hot side on the beer, you're actually getting some recognizable alpha acid bitterness in the bar. Like you can really taste the full range of what's going on with those hops beyond just aroma. Felipe or Mark, I mean, has that been interesting to you to see the character of the hops going into that bar?
Yeah, you definitely notice the presence of the hop oils post-treatment after Eric receives the beans back and dries them out and processes them. I have a couple of I was looking into some notes from previous batches here. So Mark said that we have, I mean, I think we've done a couple of trials, right, Mark? But it was a lot of trial and error to see what worked the best with Eric Nibs. But I think the last batch that we did here in Somerville, we used, I think, 64 pounds per 9 barrels of nibs in the mesh, plus 22 pounds of nibs cold side. So, of course, I mean, whatever goes into the mesh, Eric is not going to be able to turn into chocolate. Only the cows that would eat it afterwards can turn
Right.
into chocolate milk. As a joke, because we do actually have a relationship with farmers that take our spent grain either to feed the cows or pigs. But we have pretty high numbers for, I'd say, pounds per barrel of nibs here, fortunately, because we get great stuff from Eric. Long story short, or a very long answer to your question is that it's pretty interesting to see that the bitterness travels throughout the whole process, and it's noticeable if you put like a regular chocolate bar next to a bar that had the fermented nibs. You can easily tell which one is which.
So those nibs are going into the mash, and then post fermentation, you're not adding directly into the boil or anything like that.
We'll be right back.
Hey everyone, 5th Street Brew Pub in Dayton, Ohio is one of our sponsors at Bean to Barstool and Final Gravity, our print beer zine, and they just happen to be one of my favorite hometown breweries. They're one of the only cooperatively owned breweries in the country, a testament to their community focus and support. Inside a building from the 1850s in the historic neighborhood of St. Ann's Hill, 5th Street Brew Pub offers a warm, cozy atmosphere and excellent beer and food. And you can take your favorite beers to go with their Gem City Swing Tops, elegant swing top bottles filled straight from the taps with regular favorites like St. Ann's Pils and Rough Gem Farmhouse Ale, or current seasonals like Noel Belgian Dark Ale with vanilla and cinnamon, or Velvet Anxiety, a bourbon barrel imperial stout brewed with cacao nibs from Mezzo Cacao. If you're in the Dayton area, head over to 5th Street to hang out or grab beer to go. And if you're visiting Dayton, and you should, make sure 5th Street is on your list. Cheers.
It was in the mash, directly in the mesh, as you would like norm you would mix your dark malts, your specialty malts, if you will. Or we at times would do like a little before the sparge, or we would do like while we're mashing in, just basically layering it, and then that goes to the farm for to feed the animals, and the rest we refined the process as well over the years that we started to bag the nibs that are going into the fermenter. So whenever we're done with fermentation and transferring the beer into a bright tank, we literally just pull the bags out, put it in a bin, and just bring it over to Eric so he can actually dry the nibs and process the cacao.
So you're adding it during primary, and then are you dry hopping again after fermentation?
It's during primary mainly, I would
Okay.
say, maybe towards the end of primary fermentation. For example, here we did a small collab here with Eric a couple of weeks ago, and that we did, it was all post-fermentation, bright beer already, cold side only. So primary was long gone, and we just did a cold infusion with his nibs. So have tried the use of cacao in multiple stages, I would say, to try to see to capture the best essence of the product.
And then Eric, What was the trial and error like when you've got these now soaking wet, you know, beer infused nibs to turn that into chocolate?
The first few batches were sort of one way. I'd give them the nibs and then they went off and that was that. Then we had the idea of getting them back again. I think at first there was a little bit of self-doubt because in chocolate world, bitterness is considered a defect normally. A little bit sort of like a bit of MSG in a way. It can kind of enhance things. But so I thought, gee, is this really, you know, is this what we're doing now, a bitter chocolate? And people actually either absolutely adore it or they hate it because it's a really interesting set of flavors. And it's the sequence that you perceive those in kind of varies. It's like a long drawn out process. So anyway, that whole discovery was both interesting and a little bit, I wouldn't say nerve wracking, but just like, whoa, this is interesting. What do I do with this? But I don't think that it really required much tweaking other than just drying the nibs. It didn't really require much different with my process beyond that. So since then, we've done is a very different in what comes through when you use the nibs in the fermenter, as they've described, which is my base beer bar. And the more recent project, and we've done another one like this in the past too, where you basically soak the nibs in finished beer for a shorter period of time, you get much less of the bitterness, more other nuance of the beer that might be overwhelmed by some of the more basic aspects of the brewing process. So that can be kind of interesting to play around with.
I think a lot of the bitterness that we get from the nibs that went into primary is related to the yeast that's actually attached to the nibs. I mean, if you try a beer that's actively fermenting, you get a lot of that yeast bite. It's a little meaty, it's a little bready, and it has bitterness as well. So I think that the cacao that went through primary or was actually surrounded by a lot of yeast will carry a lot of that bitterness that comes from the yeast cells. That's my personal opinion from whatever we see here in a day-to-day, our life here in the brewery, basically. I don't know if Mark agrees with that, but I think it can be related to it. And I do agree with Eric as well that the beer that the project that we did only pulse fermentation and like bright beer infusion, it's a lot cleaner and it does not have that bitterness from the yeast or hops.
Yeah, I totally agree with what Felipe was saying. And the other thing is that the first couple of times we gave Eric the nibs, it's kind of like what Felipe said, but we didn't have the bag so that the yeast settles out and then all the nibs, instead of being in a bag being hung into the beer, it all just fell to the bottom. So it was mixed with a lot of yeast. We just took out what everything was down there, kind of concentrated on the getting the nibs and not the yeast, but there's still a lot of yeast in it. And Eric processed some of that with all that yeast on it and you get more bitterness. Because it's interesting is because anytime yeast are around hops, they absorb the alpha acid, the bitterness of hops, and they seem to kind of concentrate it, or at least it absorbs onto the cell wall. And that obviously just adds that much more bitterness. And so now the beer is clear. There's no yeast in it. When we put the nibs in it, it just gives a less bitter chocolate.
That makes sense. Yeah. So, Eric, have you noticed that change in the level of bitterness since you've been getting it bagged versus sitting down in the yeast previously?
Yes, I would say I noticed it not as intensely as I thought I would, but it was definitely there. And I guess it kind of detached the bitterness from the what I consider the bread dough flavor, which I don't know if that's the industry standard or not, but I was getting more of the bread dough kind of character before they changed the process. And I noticed that change more than the bitterness. And okay, also to change it in the other direction, I think Marco might remember this. We did a project once where we tried loading up a cask with a beer with as much nibs as you could fit. Or you might be able to expound on that, but it was kind of a fun exploration to see, is there a point where it's too much cacao to put into beer? And what is, does it just get more and more chocolatey, or do other flavor notes come through that you wouldn't expect?
It wasn't real drinkable. You got too much cacao nibs in. It started bringing out vegetal flavors from the cacao that just didn't go well. So we're a little hesitant now on trying to load the beer up too much with cacao nibs. This beer was actually a pale chocolate beer. So it wasn't a stout. It was trying to really focus all to get as much flavor as we could chocolate into the beer. So I can't remember how many pounds we put in it per gallon, but it was a lot. And it was, like you say, it was a pretty pale beer. It had the chocolate notes, and it definitely was better when it was fresher too. But yeah, it's just overall, there's a limit to how much you can put in and have it still taste
I'm interested in seeing
good.
more of those pale styles. I think that there's an opportunity there to do some interesting things with cacao and chocolate because we're so used to just having them complementing the dark roast of the malt, like you were talking about earlier. So that is interesting. Now, Eric, I know you also do the bar with hops, and you're, as I understand it, you're steeping the nibs in like a hop tea. Is that right?
The hop infused, the dark milk bar. Yes, although I've more recently switched to just doing an air infusion with that. That seems to be a cleaner way to do it. And oddly, certain aromas that are really, really strong won't really jump ship so quickly to a chocolate, but hops, the minute it gets airborne, it just like clings to the cocoa butter. I don't know what it is in the chemically speaking, but so air infusions become the way to go with that. And that is a way to avoid any of the bitterness at all. Previously, I was trying to do lots of tweaks with mixing and dilutions and things like that. So that's been an evolving process.
And I believe you've told me before you really like the more tropical hops for that, Citra, Mosaic, Amarillo, is that right?
Yeah, we've tended to use Mosaic and Citra the most. And we did an experiment a few years back where we used, I think, six different hops, and I tried to infuse them all the same way. And certain ones, Mark might correct me that the noble hop, they just wouldn't really jump ship so quickly. There was a very different level of intensity among all the hops, even though they initially seemed the same when you smell them.
Yeah, Mark, what was your experience with that?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. When Eric came to me to talk about what type of hops to use it for this, I kind of thought the fruity, the newer at that time, hops like Citra and Mosaic might bring a better flavor to it than the earthy, people call it spicy, but it's not spicy in cooking ways necessarily of the noble hops, leathery, something like that. They work well in beer, but I didn't think they'd work that well in chocolate. And I guess I kind of got that one. We tried a few other fruity ones too, some newer ones from different parts of the world as well. I remember at the time there were some new English hops out that were fruity, Jester, I think, or something. And that it just didn't work as well. And it was interesting that the Citra and the Mosaic became kind of Eric's my favorite too, from the chocolate in me.
One thing that I'm a little bit sort of a current exploration is to decide to what extent the hop age and level oxidation matters in chocolate or not. Because I understand in beer, you really want them fresh out of the bag. And I'm finding, especially with the air infusions, that perhaps as the hop matures a little bit in a container over 2 or 3 weeks, say, if kind of that evolution of the underlying aroma is actually working in the chocolate's favor or not, and that's just something I'm to be continued. Sort of
What
like a
changes are you seeing? What differences are you seeing in those chocolates?
sort of like a vet to use Mark's word, a vegetal quality that kind of comes up. At first you get like this explosion of kind of like this effervescent thing with pine and pineapple and evergreen and stuff like that. But as it matures, it picks up a little bit more, I don't want to say grassy, but more like a well-rounded, less punch to it, but more of a full depth of flavor in an earthier, more well-grounded sense.
So I know that you've also done a collaboration with vanilla, where vanilla was used in a beer and then again in the bar. Is that correct?
Yes, they could speak to the beer itself, but what was the first one you gave me? It was from the pastry style, wasn't it?
So let me talk about a little bit about our creative process. Eric is at the end of a big hall, and I have to walk past Eric pretty much every day, multiple times a day. And smell everything and look at him. So, creative process is pretty much like, hey Eric, what's happening in your world? And that's pretty much how things start. And then I was like, hey Eric, we're gonna have a beer that we're gonna use vanilla. Do you want the vanilla? Or do you want spent coconut flakes? Failed project. But everything, like any like fermentation byproduct that we think that it may work. Not in chocolate. I'm always like, here, Eric, here's this like little soggy wet bag for you. And then he tries to dry it out and then we try it together. So the vanilla is one of those odd projects that I believe it was like you mentioned, Eric, it was a pastry stout as the cool kids call nowadays. And I think I don't recall what type of vanilla, but we use a pretty sizable amount of it, and we always like hand cut the vanilla pods and all that stuff, and then I usually bag it because I know that it might become something afterwards. So I usually just bring it to her here. You want it? And then that's how it started. It's very interesting to see how he proceeds after that. Because for us, we all would think like, oh, you just mix it with whatever you're doing, right? And then he has like a completely different approach. Like, oh, this is gonna be infused like this because of this, this, and that. So it's Eric can speak more about the chocolate making process. But this is usually that's how usually things happen here. It's very organic. And whenever Eric needs some beer infused nibs, he'll tell us. Whenever we have some byproduct from fermentation, we tell him. And that's a pretty interesting and symbiotic relationship that we have.
That's great. I love that. Eric, talk about the vanilla.
Well, yeah, that I'm thinking of a few others. So the vanillas, is a self-serving thing. I'm ha more than happy not to pay for vanilla if I could get away with it. It's incredibly expensive. So two things come to mind: the vanilla and the coffee beans. Coffee and chocolate go to bed together like the most basic of things. The vanilla that we've done, the flavor extracts into the beer rather strongly. In fact, if you try one of the more recent chocolate ones we did with the that we just referenced, where the nibs went in a finished beer, one of them had vanilla beans in it, and the vanilla really jumps into the bar a lot. And I tend to think that what comes out as a reclaimed ingredient from the vanilla beans doesn't have as much of the vanilla flavor left in it, and therefore there's more room in that inclusion for other things that's in the beer versus the coffee, which, if I didn't say it came from beer, you'd have no idea, I don't think, because the coffee is super forceful ingredient. So I've used the vanilla beans in a white chocolate, and I'll be doing another one shortly with some newer vanilla beans I just got from them. And people tend to say it tastes a bit like dulce de leche or caramel, things like that. Not so much just brute vanilla. The coffee, of course, is straightforward coffee. And I don't think this conversation would be complete without discussing one of our failures, which was, I think it was the pastry stout one, where you gave me a bunch of toasted coconut. I think they would confirm
Yeah,
which beer that was. And I had this
that was it.
idea of making a white chocolate with that, like a vegan white. And that was perhaps the worst exploration we've had. I had a bunch of bars and that I kept pushing on my people to see if anybody out there could have any idea for it, because I really hated to throw that ingredient away. But that was pure bitterness and not much coconut.
Is that just because of the fat content of the coconut soaking up that bitterness from the beer?
I mean, chemically, I don't know. I guess if that's the way the bitterness, what it clings to. I think probably a combination of that and the fact that the coconut really does lose a lot of its character to the beer, and you're left with just starch. It's kind of like cardboard. But that was unfortunate because I had a lot of that stuff. I spent a while drying it out. It
Yeah,
was fun. Yeah, it was like a sponge for like hop oils, and then like all the coconut oils and flavors gone. And then Eric gave me a handful of it, and I was like, oh, this is just awful.
That's funny. I wouldn't, it sounds like it would be great. That's not something I would have guessed at all.
Yep. Unless we try to do in like a beer that has very, very low bitterness, but the coconut flavor was pretty much gone. So, which means that for us, it's very good because we had a good extraction. But for Eric, at that point, it wasn't a very it wasn't a happy experiment for him.
Well, let's talk about this most recent collab with the Baltic Porter then. Felipe or Mark, one of you tell me a little bit about the beer, and then we'll talk about the chocolate.
So originally, our boss always liked a Baltic Porter, and she wasn't really saying, "Hey, you got to make a Baltic Porter." So I kept bugging her. I said, "We need to make a Baltic Porter. You really want one, don't you?" So she finally acquiesced and said, "No, I won't say no if you brew us a Baltic Porter." So Baltic Porter it was made in the Baltic states, predominantly because when Napoleon invaded, they couldn't get their porter, which they fell in love with, which was made in England, which was the birthplace of porter. And so they decided to start brewing their own porters. So, and like anybody who's doing something, they're going to do it a little bit differently. And they ended up, one of the big changes, they used a lager yeast for it. So it comes out a little smoother, a little less fruity from the ale yeast at higher temperature. produces. And there's some other differences too. And so we decided to make one to use a lot of malts that are a little bit closer to the Baltics, but not on the Baltics, and specifically Czechoslovakian dark malts. A lot of them were floor malted. So we got some really interesting floor malted character out of it. And it turned out really nice. And then Felipe says, well, we don't want to make the same thing the next year. Just change something up. And he suggested, well, why don't we throw maybe a little bit of smoked malt in it as well, and some rye malt. So I'm going to throw it back over to Felipe at this point, and he can continue the story on and then what we did and stick in barrels as well.
So, and we designed this beer. We all absolutely love this brand. I think it finally reached the point that we are happy with it. And it's designed for barrels. So it's very robust. It has a really nice body, and it's supposed to endure like at least a year in wood, basically. So the first round that we did here was fully matured in bourbon barrels. And this second collaboration, which Mark and I tweaked the recipe a little bit, it has a little bit more rye and a touch more of smoked malts that we like a lot. I think going back to what Eric said about the hops and the bitterness, I think it's a very polarizing thing for the chocolate people. And I think that smoke is a very polarizing thing for a beer people. You either love it or you hate it. There's no like in between there. So we decided to just do a touch of that for complexity. And I think it goes really well with the barrels that we're using. Get a little more of that char, that marshmallow, you know, almost like burnt sugar thing to it. And I think it's fantastic. This one it's probably the best one. One of the best dark beers that we have put out, in my humble opinion. So the beer spent, I think, almost a year in two bourbon barrels and two rye barrels from the same distillery in Kentucky. Eric told us that he needed some nibs. And I talked to Mark and I was like, well, let's do something. And I was like, Eric, how much do you need? And then Mark was like, oh, we maybe should try to push the envelope and like go big or go home. So I think we went with like a pretty crazy high number of pounds per barrel there that I don't think we've ever done that before here. And I think it was what, Mark, like 9 pounds per barrel, something like that. Mainly to please Eric so he can get more chocolate. Yes, I'll keep that as a little lie there because it pleased everyone. But that's basically how it happened. And I think it was a 24 hour, maybe 48 hour infusion, and basically like fully finished, cold. I think maybe like even partially carbonated beer. This was a fun project that Eric can talk more about because he was already nerding out on some other things about temperature on how to roast the nibs. So just a little hook for you, Eric.
Yeah, well, so we did two batches using this time a nib from Northern Ecuador. And the cacao I used for this was a Nacional, which is sort of the native variety that's in Northern Ecuador. I was curious if we could explore to what extent roast of the cacao really has a presence in the beer, if it change it or not. So one batch, I gave them, I think, 9 pounds of nibs that had been very gently roasted, maybe in the range of 240 to 260 for, I think, 45 minutes or so, which is fairly cool for a cacao roast. And the other one was like a quick roast at 300 or so for maybe half that period of time. And they did two batches. The batch with the low roasted cacao, they threw in some vanilla to kind of round things out. And then the other batch is just the hotter roasted nibs, and those set by themselves. And they're both very, I enjoy the bars. That what surprised me, and I remember they mentioned this during the processing, that the rate at which the vanilla worked its way into the beer was different than the rate at which the cacao worked its way in. So I think there was some concern that leaving it long enough to give the cacao a strong presence would overdo the vanilla. I don't know if I'm misstating that or not. The end result was a very vanilla-laden chocolate. And I would say the barrel had a really good presence in the bars as well. You get this kind of oaky spirit feel to it. So I think all around it's well balanced. There's a little bit of bitterness from the hops, but not much. I don't think that this time spent in the beer was enough to really wash out the character, the cacao, or anything like that. So the roast difference is pronounced. Not as it does sort of mute it a little bit. Like that level of roast would normally be a bit more of an espresso-y bar. In this bar, it was not quite that much. But interestingly, what I thought of as vanilla flavor in the vanilla flavored bar, a lot of that was also the barrel, the oak and the bourbon and things like that. So there's some melding of flavors there.
Felipe or Mark, how did you feel like the flavor of those two different cacaos came through differently in the beer?
First one we did was the higher, hotter roasted cacao nibs. And we left that go just 24 hours because I started to pick up just a little bit of that vegetal feeling or flavor that I had gotten when we soaked a lot of beans in the pale one before. And we just left that soak for days, maybe even over a week. So it was really long. So I was definitely watching that up or so. Didn't get that. Well, after 24 hours, I said I was getting a little of that. But then when we did the vanilla one with the lower temperature roasted one, I didn't pick up that after 24 hours. So we let it go 48 hours to pick up a little bit more vanilla. At that point, we didn't think the vanilla was shining through as much. And so that actually really helped to bring out a little bit more vanilla in it. But then in the beer, it just seemed like there was a little bit more espresso notes, I would say, like in the hotter chocolate one. And it was a little milder, maybe not quite milk chocolatey like, but less sharp, a little less, yeah, sharp is probably the best word, less sharp, a little smoother in the lower roasted one.
We'll be right back.
Hey everyone, Final Gravity Issue 4 is now available in the Bean to Barstool shop. This fourth issue of our zine telling intimate, human-centered stories from the world of beer is full of great articles, including Kate Power of Lady Justice Brewing talking about why she might be done with beer festivals, Ukrainian beer writer Lana Svitnikova writing about the Zeugel brewing tradition in Germany, UK writer Matthew Curtis talking about the blend of old and new in the cask ale tradition in Manchester, and many more. We believe passionately in this project, and if you believe the story of beer is ultimately a story about people and relationships, we think you'll love Final Gravity as well. You can order the new issue from our shop on beantobarstool.com, or you can also subscribe, including subscribing for your brewery tap room or break room, or you can subscribe and sign up to support us on Patreon at patreon.com/beantobarstoolzines. Now, back to the episode. Be really interested to know from a chemical standpoint what the roast is changing that is leading to that more vegetal extraction on the darker roast. I imagine that's something that hasn't been studied much, but I'd be really curious to know what that actual chemical pathway is that's leading to that, because that doesn't seem to me like a logical flavor that would come from it being roasted more. Well, looking forward, since you have this constant creative give and take, what are conversations you've had of things you would like to try still between chocolate making and brewing?
Personally, one thing that's been, as a non-brewer, there's this cliche with chocolate and dark beers, and I can't really speak to that in any greater detail, but I've wondered what would happen if one were to put nibs into a beer that's a light beer or you know, summery kind of thing. What happens? You know, would it bother people to have this disassociation with the dark beer and the underlying chocolate, or could it be something new and exciting? I don't know.
We've seen a lot of that with coffee. I know there's a lot more pale coffee beers now that give a really bright, fresh coffee aroma rather than that more intense roast, like if you're doing a coffee stout. So I wonder if that would translate over on the cacao side. Mark or Felipe, how about you two? What are things you would like to do since you have access to Eric and his ingredients?
It's very interesting because same as for like beer, I would say that you like to try. I think the more you try, the more you want to try and experiment as well. So we've been like playing a lot with different types of tea, different types of coffee. Now cacao. Eric has been playing a lot with spices. I was literally just processing like almost 2 pounds of coriander. And tomorrow I'm going to process more black limes for a beer. So maybe tomorrow you're going to get a bag of something, Eric. You want some black limes or coriander?
I would take that. I did a couple of bars for a woman who brought me various spice blends from her family. She was from India, and I guess it's kind of in the tradition. Each family has their own like preferred blend of spices. And one of the interesting things with chocolate is the balance gets changed a lot when you throw it into the fat of the cocoa butter. So coriander, that's what made me think of that. Coriander jumped way out in front of everything else in one of these spice blends. And a lot of the other ingredients kind of went away or took the back burner. So I don't know how much coriander. I try a little bit. And the black lime, I think there's some other makers working with that. I can't remember who they are, but that would be interesting to try too.
All right, last thing I'll ask you all, I'll ask each of you this, your single favorite collaboration that has come out of this, whether it's a bar or a beer, just your single favorite flavor experience that's come from you all working in close proximity. Eric, what's been your favorite?
My favorite of the collaborations, that is a tough one. I think that this most recent one with the vanilla and the lightly roasted cacao is probably the most approachable and the bar I'd most grab if I wanted just to eat something. Having said that, the white chocolate with the coffee is just downright lovely, but it's not super fair to call that a collaboration because you're not really getting beer in that. I think it's just the coffee. So
Felipe, how about you?
I'm very biased to this latest collab. I think I'll go on the opposite end of what Eric said. I think I'll go with the Baltic Porter that received the cool or the hot roasted nibs without the vanilla. I think it's just beautiful. It's nutty and it hits all those rich like chocolate notes and without the interference of the sweet notes from the vanilla. Sometimes some people even say medicinal, which we strive to move away from, generally speaking. But I would say the bar that I tried that received the nibs that were hot roasted without vanilla was probably one of my favorite things that we've done together.
Mark, how about you?
I would also say the Baltic Porter. It just felt a little bit more elegant having the cocoa nibs in there. It was already a great beer before we barrel aged it, and it became really great as well when we barrel aged it. It was just so smooth, and then throwing the nibs and even the vanilla in just really made it thing. And then the chocolate too. It just seemed to hit the right notes, and I like both of them just because. It's hard for me to decide which I've been eating. While we've been talking, I've been eating both of the bars, and I really can't say which one I prefer, but it's 'cause they're enough different, and you wouldn't think there'd be that much difference, and there is, and I really like them both. And it was the same thing with the two beers that we made too. I really like those. Now what I got to do is drink a little of each of those beers and try each of the chocolate as well.
Eric's beer chocolate bars really are fascinating, and I have enjoyed getting to taste the four that I have tried so far. The contrast between the hops dark milk and the beer fermented is really interesting. Both of them have a lot of hop character, but highlight different aspects of hops. The hops dark milk gives a lot more of the aromatic qualities from the hops, a little bit of fruitiness, whereas the beer fermented showcases a little bit more bitterness. And I thought it was interesting that Felipe explained that while some of that is directly from the hops, there's also some bitterness coming from yeast bite, which is that bitterness attributed to the yeast that is falling out of suspension. As they're pulling those nibs out of the bottom of the conical fermenter, that is bringing with it some of that yeast slurry. That yeast slurry has its own bitterness and is also holding on to some of the hop bitterness as well. It's all just really interesting. On the two more recent bars, the ones that were made with the Baltic Porter, that contrast is more subtle but no less fascinating. I really enjoyed the lighter roast that had the vanilla, particularly because of the quality of the vanilla itself. Rather than just a typical baking vanilla, I got more of a floral kind of cherry blossom note from it, along with a toasted marshmallow, which was just really beautiful in there. There are no harsh edges on this bar at all. It just has this rich, kind of woolly, soft character to it. Really lovely. The one that featured the heavier roasted cacao without vanilla is a little bit more of a kind of classic, roasty, dark chocolate. You get a little bit of like a hop tea, like a black tea quality to it. Again, a little bit more notable roast. It is very good. It's kind of just like a classic representation of bringing porter or stout and chocolate together. So not quite as unexpected as the lighter roast, but you know, very, very good. I enjoyed all four of these quite a bit. I would love to hear from you which of these bars you would be most interested in tasting, which one makes you the most curious between the beer fermented, the hops dark milk, and then these two with the Baltic porter, the one with the light roast and vanilla and the one with the darker roast cacao. Let me know on social media which of these is most interesting to you. I have not had the opportunity to make it up to Aeronaut and taste any of the beers made with Eric's cacao, which I would love to get to do that. They all sound really good. I'd be interested to hear which of those most piqued your interest as well. This is such an interesting collaboration, an ongoing creative relationship. I love the opportunity that it gives to explore what cacao and chocolate and beer can do together beyond the constraints of sort of, like Eric said, getting to see each other, you know, driving out to the brewery every few months and getting to taste things together. This allows for that ongoing day-to-day collaboration, and it's so interesting what has come out of that. Before we wrap up, quick announcement, and you will be seeing plenty more about this on Bean to Barstool's social media channels and my own socials as well. You all know about the Pairing Beer and Chocolate zine that I published a year and a half ago. Thank you to everyone who has purchased that zine over the last 18 months. I am going to be publishing that as a book, and it will be available in just a couple weeks. So I will have details out about that soon. It is expanded, has even more beer styles in it. Really pleased with how it came out visually. It also has room in the book for taking notes on your own pairing. So look out for that announcement. I will be having the details all over the place very soon. So thank you so much for listening today. Hope you enjoyed this episode of Bean to Barstool.